Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Wednesday, June 18th, and President Donald Trump has called for unconditional surrender from Iran, which, according to reports this morning, they have rejected. So we will see where this goes and where the United States' involvement in the conflict between Iran and Israel goes. Meanwhile, according to The Hill, bipartisan lawmakers are introducing a resolution to prohibit U.S. involvement in Iran. So this is a bipartisan group of House members yesterday introduced a war powers resolution to prohibit U.S. involvement in Iran as the conflict with Israel intensifies, signaling they may force a vote on the matter. This includes Representative Thomas Massie, a Republican from Kentucky, who's one of the most outspoken libertarian-leaning Republicans advocating against U.S. military intervention abroad. Of course, this is from The Hill, posted on the social media site X on Monday, he would introduce such a resolution. He said, "This is not our war, but if it were, Congress must decide such matters according to our Constitution. I'm introducing a bipartisan war powers resolution tomorrow to prohibit our involvement. I invite all members of Congress to co-sponsor this resolution." So let's welcome in one of his colleagues on the Hill, Representative Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana. So, Representative, your thoughts on this war resolution and where Congress is going from here?
Good morning, Jenna. Great to be with you. You know, I appreciate and believe that it's important for Congress to be talking about the circumstances in the Middle East and especially, you know, related to Iran. I was in Israel a couple of weeks ago, and this is what I think is really important for all of us to remember. And I am not saying that we should not have the discussion and the dialogue in Congress, because we should. We are Article 1 of the Constitution. We are, you know, representatives of the people. And when it comes to war powers, we have to take this very, very seriously. And if there's anybody who has shown a resistance to going into battle, it has been President Trump. There are plenty of, you know, war drums beating around Washington, D.C. But in this case, you know, I think it's important to have the dialogue. But as I mentioned, going to Israel and understanding the importance of not allowing Iran to have a nuclear weapon is so critical. Jenna, I guess with all that I can explain to people, if you let Iran have a nuclear weapon, and the thing is, they will tell you that they're not developing one. They will tell you that, you know, they're not developing a nuclear bomb. They're just needing nuclear capability for utility purposes. Well, they've got plenty of gas and oil. They can use that. But Iran has shown themselves over and over to be sponsors of terrorism. And this is where, you know, I would make the argument in Congress. I will make the argument in Congress that we have to stand with Israel. And not only are we just standing with Israel, I mean, Iran wants to wipe Israel off the map with a nuclear bomb, but they're also a threat to Saudi Arabia. They're a threat to Turkey. They're a threat to that part of the world and the greater part of the world with a nuclear bomb. They would have a gun in their hand and they could point it at anybody and hold anyone hostage if they had a nuclear bomb. That's why it's so important for Israel to win in this case, and it's important for us to stand with Israel. And if it need be for us to use our bunker buster technology to take out greater parts of that nuclear program, I would support the president to do that.
And I think that there are a lot of people on your side of the aisle, on the Republican side, that have that similar view. And so when you look at the composition of Congress, And especially as you mentioned, you know, with Article 1 and a declaration of war, that's a little different, of course, than just assisting and some of the things and the responses that the executive branch can do. Where is the split here in terms of is it along party lines, or, you know, obviously a couple of people like Thomas Massie are leaning against any sort of intervention. Where overall is the Republican conference on this?
Yeah, I think you'd find that there's going to probably be one. If there's two Republicans, I would be surprised. Out of almost 220 Republicans in the House of Representatives, I'd be surprised if there's anybody in the Senate. If it came down to a vote now, you know, to talk about it, absolutely, we should be talking about it. That's part of our job. But I think this will mostly be the far right, very far right, and the very far left. And in this case, it's not necessarily, there's two different schools of thought on the far right and the far left in this situation. You have, you know, a libertarian point of view where we don't get involved in other people's wars. I understand that. But at the same time, we're the United States of America and we're standing with Israel. But on the far left, you have an anti-Semitic point of view. And so that's their reason for supporting this war resolution, is because they don't support Israel as a country. They would rather see Israel eliminated, frankly. And that's a very dangerous viewpoint to be saddling up with. And that's why I think and I'm even surprised, Jenna, of some of the voices on the right who are not standing with Israel. This is not just about Israel. I mean, to me it is, but it's also about a secure Middle East. Look at Syria right now. I was in Syria over the Easter break, and there's a chance for peace in Syria. I mean, it's a tough part of the world, and people could say, oh, it'll never happen. Well, you know what? If you're not optimistic and at least try, it'll never happen. And so you have a new president in Syria who is, he has a checkered past, but find someone in the Middle East that doesn't. But look at the UAE. The United Arab Emirates has come so far. Look at their curriculum that they're teaching in their schools. They're not teaching hate. They're not teaching that you kill the Jews or the Americans. They're teaching openness. They're teaching freedom of religion. Look at the Saudis. They have come a long way, considering the fact that that's where the attackers from 9/11 were basically from, was from Saudi Arabia. But look at what Salman, Prince Salman, is saying about the circumstances with Iran. And so I think, and I'm hoping, that the Saudis will help the Israelis against the Iranian regime. The Syrians are leaving their skies open to defending, helping Israel defend themselves. They don't have much of a military because they've been annihilated by their former leader Assad in Syria. So they're just new. But Turkey should be stepping up and helping support this cause. And so it shouldn't be just the United States. It should be other freedom-loving countries that believe in peace and prosperity should all be at the table helping support stop Iran from having a nuclear bomb.
I'm speaking with Congressman Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana. And Congressman, I agree with you and your point of view here, and the president's as well, about stopping and preventing Iran from having a nuclear bomb. I think that the intervention approach, at least insofar as assisting Israel, makes a lot of sense. And I think being America first in a way that some of the far right base articulates it is a little too simplistic to suggest that just because we're interested in our own national sovereignty first, then that requires us to never intervene in any other types of conflict, because the world stage necessarily will affect us in America. And so with that, what steps so you have Massie in this bipartisan legislation saying, you know, we want a resolution that we won't exercise war powers. But in your view, what steps should Congress take to ensure that Israel has the resources and intelligence support it needs to defend itself?
Well, you know, we have always been working hand in hand with Israel. And when I was in Israel, I was with Ambassador Mike Huckabee, who I was just thrilled when President Trump announced him as the ambassador from the United States to Israel. Couldn't think of a better person to fill that role. And he was telling us how they are working so closely together. And again, you know, I was down on the southern border in Israel. It was a soft border. Hamas and Palestinians attacked Israel on a soft border. That's what happens when you have a soft border. That's why it's important to have a strong border on our southern border along Mexico and any place that there's a threat. I think that it's important that, you know, this week a lot will happen. I think we're also realizing and believing that or seeing that Iran is not they're a paper tiger. That's why they want a nuclear bomb so quickly, because if they can get a hold of the gun, they can point it at anybody and hold anybody hostage while they have a gun. So that's why it's important not to let them have a gun. And I think a lot will happen this week. We're out of session. The Senate is in, I guess, but the House is not. So President Trump, you know, has this week, and I think a lot will happen in a short amount of time. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see once we get back next Monday. I'm sure Speaker Mike Johnson, who also, you know, is a strong supporter of the relationship between the United States and Israel, is talking with the White House on a daily basis. And you know, we'll have that conversation. But like you mentioned earlier, the president does have the power and the authority to defend the United States. And under these circumstances, if you're seeing the narrative come out of Iran, what they're saying, you have to take that at face value. You can't just assume that it's bloviating, which, you know, a lot of times it is. But if they did have some sort of nuclear capability, we have to take it very seriously. And the president needs to take any action to protect America and to protect our allies. And why, you know, these voices, again, on the right are saying we shouldn't be standing with Israel, I just don't understand it. It is the only democracy in the Middle East. And if we support democracy, we should be supporting our ally Israel, who has shown over and over they are trying to live in peace with their neighbors.
So well said. And I think, Representative Sussman, this underscores why having evangelical Christians in positions of power. You mentioned Mike Huckabee, who's the ambassador to Israel, Speaker Mike Johnson, yourself as well in Congress. You are all very strong Christians who have a biblical theology and perspective, not only on mm-hmm. Israel, but national sovereignty and all yeah. of these things. That matters here, because I think the worldview is necessarily informing what's driving the policy.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And it is. It's very different. You know, some people would say, well, what about Ukraine? And you know what? I've been rooting for Ukraine, but should we be sending billions and billions of dollars to Ukraine without any accountability? Should we be the ones that are, you know, funding operations around the world? Not always. And what I think is important is that we stand with those who are standing for righteousness, first of all, and standing for truth, standing for American principles and values. I had the chance to talk to the president of Kosovo, and I may have shared this with you a couple of weeks ago, but she's a young 40-some-year-old president of Kosovo. And again, they haven't been in the news for a long time, but that's a war-torn area. It's a part of the world that has always seen unrest. And she was sharing with me that because of America, that her children are the first generation in over 1,000 years to see peace in their lifetime. They haven't seen any war in her children's lifetime for almost 25 years. And that goes all the way back to the 90s and the Clinton administration. And she said, you don't realize, you know, Marlon, and she said, I want Americans to know the impact that you have around the world for good. And I know that sometimes, you know, being the biggest and the most powerful, there comes a weight with that. And sometimes it's tiring because it feels like we're trying to help everybody. Well, we're not. But in the cases where we can and make a difference, we should be willing to do that. But we do have to take care of things at home first. That's absolutely most important. If we're not healthy at home, we can't help anyone else. And that's why it's important to be America first. But we're not America only. And it just showed me again the impact that America has for good when we defeat evil, and then good things can happen and children can grow up without even knowing what war is.
Yeah, so well said. And speaking of taking care of things at home as well, You introduced a bill the first week of June. The GOP bill takes aim at Congress's No Rules Apply emergency spending. So your bill would require the feds to adhere to a 5-point criteria before approving emergency funds like during the COVID-19 pandemic. So switching gears a little bit here in just the last few minutes I have with you, this bill would address irresponsible emergency spending in a couple of parts. This seems really important, especially in light of what we all went through here in America during the COVID pandemic and saw how much emergency powers were utterly abused on both the state and federal level.
Yeah, you know, I think most Americans, we would all think that Congress has a rainy day fund that we dip into for an emergency. Well, we don't. Sad news. And so the Emergency Spending Accountability Act addresses this. Of the $27 trillion of debt that public debt that we hold at the federal government, $12 trillion of that was added to the credit card through emergency spending. If you remember the saying that Rahm Emanuel said back during the recession, years ago, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Well, Congress has been taking advantage of crises and spending to the tune of $12 trillion in debt and putting it on the credit card for Americans to pay later. And so adding, and you put all the interest on top of that, it's just astounding. And so my emergency spending is important, but it has to be paid back within 5 years, 20% over each year for 5 years to pay it back. And the other part that I want to include in the discussion is that it should be off budget rather than it always
I think we're losing the representative here. Yeah, and we just heard that dial tone. So we'll go to break here and see if we can get the representative back sometime this week. And we want to make sure that we can have a full articulation of what is in this important new piece of legislation. But you can also go to stutzman.house.gov and you can read the full press release on this legislation that's called the Emergency Spending Accountability Act and how this bill addresses irresponsible emergency spending in several parts. And so I'd encourage you to go there. Also follow at Rep. Stutzman on X. You can also follow him on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media to make sure that you get all of those updates. But we need to pray as Christians for this conflict with Iran, for the United States involvement. Pray for the members of Congress that they would have wisdom in executing their oaths of office as well as the president. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And remember tariffs and all of the left's doomsday predictions? And, that seems like a really long time ago that we were talking about tariffs. But, that's the Trump world news cycle, right? Well, there is an opinion piece by our good friend Jim Nels in Fox News this week that the left's tariffs doomsday predictions fall flat as Trump's America thrives. Gas prices are down. Small business optimism is up as predictions of demolished wealth fail to materialize. So let's welcome in Jim Nels this morning. And Jim, this does seem like the economy is not falling flat as the left predicted. But at the same time, we're still dealing with a lot of the remaining Bidenflation, and a lot of things that are still concerning Americans. So where are we at with the economy?
Well, you're right. We're still dealing with the Biden hangover from what he did to the economy. But if you look at what's happening, all of the left's predictions and all of the corporate media's predictions have failed to materialize. We did not see massive inflation because of the tariffs. We did not see massive unemployment because of the tariffs. We have not seen massive increases in the ability of, or decreases in the ability of Americans to support their family because of Trump's economic policies. In fact, the opposite has been true. One of the headlines that has been lost is that during the first half of this year, Americans have paid down almost $30 billion of credit card debt. That means that they have extra money and they're using that money to pay down their debt, which also means that if they want to start spending again, they will be able to spend again, which is fantastic. So I know that the left and the corporate media wants to talk us into a recession, but the economy is strong, the economy is robust, and we are nowhere near close to recession under the Trump administration.
And yeah, and that's good news, I think, overall for the president, certainly. And even with the polling numbers, we had the CEO of Rasmussen on yesterday, was talking about how, you know, Trump's approval ratings, just in the midst of, you know, the entire news cycle and everything it contains, are continuing to go up. And the vast majority of Americans feel very confident with him in the White House. How important right now, with everything, you know, going on in Iran and where the news is focused, how important are economic topics? Are Americans still focused overall on that, unless they're you know, just paying attention to the news cycle?
Well, I have a little bit different take on it, right? Americans aren't focused on the economy, which means the economy is doing great. If Americans were focused on inflation, if you look at the polling numbers right now, or you look at for small businesses, the number one thing that they're worried about is taxation. It's no longer inflation, and that has changed as we moved from the Biden administration into the Trump administration. Americans are spending money, they're paying down their debt, they're not worried about the economy. They're more worried about, are we going to end up in a shooting war, on a ground war with Iraq, or excuse me, with Iran. They're more worried about, you know, what is the final trade deal going to be with places like China. They're worried about these No Kings protests that they saw over the weekend, which they fizzled. But, you know, Jenna, I've got a rhetorical question for you. If you're allowed to protest against authoritarianism, doesn't that really mean you don't live under authoritarianism? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Don't tell
to me,
the rioters that, Jim. Don't tell them that. I think that would go over their heads.
But, you know, the point is, Americans are worried about the things that we worry about every day. We want to provide a good life for our family. We want to make sure that we've got stuff set aside for our kids. It's summertime. We're all looking on going on vacations and relaxing. Americans are not worried about the economy because the economy is doing well. The polling numbers reflect that. And no matter what the left says and no matter what the corporate media says, we're going to be just fine.
And you know, and there are some economists that, like from the OECD, that argue that long-term damage of tariff would outweigh the short-term gains. So is this kind of a temporary high, do you think, or what would be your response to some of those critics who say, well, you know, we just really haven't felt the long-term effects of the tariffs yet, and so, you know, just wait for doomsday?
Well, I think what they miss is the fact that President Trump is a pragmatist, right? He's not an ideologue, right? He's not a demagogue. So he puts things out there. He looks to see how the market reacts. He looks to see how the people react. And then he changes. And a great example of that is what he did with the tariffs on China. At one point, I think they were up at 140%, which they may as well have been infinity at that point. Now they're down at 37%, which is still high, but it's manageable for companies that really need to import things from China. That's just some of my clients do. So the other thing that we're going to see is that they're continuing to get deals done. They've gotten deals done with the UK. He's gotten other deals done with other countries, and we're going to continue to see that. The other thing that happened is that companies were smart. They actually listened to Trump while he was on the campaign trail, and he said, I'm going to put on tariffs. So what did companies do? They bought Ford. They filled all their warehouses with pre-tariff inventory that they're still selling. A lot of my clients have enough inventory to get through the rest of 2025 without having to raise prices to consumers because they bought ahead and they planned for this. We're also seeing expectations that things are going to continue to go well because we've seen the prices of shipping containers coming out of Asia increase in price. That tells me that the shippers expect more and more things to be exported from Asia to the West Coast of the United States, which is good for the economy. What we do need to work on is a trade deficit, but that's a different story for a different day. I don't foresee the tariffs having a big negative impact because, after all, if the tariffs achieve their goal, which is to get free and fair trade. What is wrong with that? As I've said before, sometimes when you take medicine when you're sick, it makes you a little bit more sick before you get better. This is what they were going through back in April and a little bit in May. But I think we're on the other side of that now, and we're starting to see the benefits of getting better and getting healthier and actually getting free and fair trade deals done.
Yeah, and that's been Trump's argument, I think, from the beginning with retaliatory tariffs. And you mentioned the recent U.S.-China trade deal, and also that the and that was, I think, around June 11th. And, you know, so it's been very recent, but also that the retaliatory tariffs are way down from the peak. And so is there still a risk, or how would you evaluate the risk of retaliatory tariffs from China or other countries offsetting some of the domestic economic gains that you describe?
Well, the biggest risk right now is the 90-day moratorium on tariffs, where he took all the tariffs except for China down to 10%, expires in early July. My hypothesis, I don't have any inside information, but if you look at the economy, you look at the polling data, you look at the way that Trump runs the country and the way he governs, I do not predict that he'll let those tariffs revert back to what they were before he gave the moratorium. So I think we're going to stay at 10%, which is good for the economy. It's good for the U.S. 10% is being eaten by the suppliers, is eaten by the importers, is eaten by the retailers. So it's not funneling through to the U.S. economy. You're not seeing it in inflation data, which is great. You also saw that when the producer price index came out last week, that was lower than expected because, again, people are not, or the input costs are not rising for producers, which means that they will not be passed on to the consumers. So I think we're in really good shape. It's just a matter of governing well, making sure that we continue to negotiate in good faith with our trading partners, not reverting back to the excessive tariffs that he put in place on Independence Day or Liberation Day, excuse me. And I think we're going to be fine. And I'm looking forward to see what happens. And I'm actually looking forward to the United States auto industry actually being able to sell cars in places like Australia, where right now or previously there were 100% tariffs on cars. So why is this a bad thing if we can open up other markets to us?
Yeah, and I'm speaking with Jim Nels, who's a supply chain consultant based in Chicago, and wrote a really great piece that you need to read in Fox News that's titled "Left's Tariff Doomsday Predictions Fall Flat as Trump's America Thrives." And you also spotlight in this piece, Jim, growing consumer and small business confidence. Do we know which sectors are really driving that optimism? Because, you know, this has been part of, as you well know, and I think listeners know, this has been part of Trump's overall America First agenda for manufacturing to come back to America, you know, services, an emphasis on agriculture, some of those things. So which sectors primarily or do we know are driving that optimism?
You're seeing it across the board. But what I'm seeing when I'm talking to my clients and when I'm talking to other of my colleagues informally is that you're seeing manufacturing sectors get incredibly excited about the future here. And what's good about what President Trump is doing is he's reducing regulations. He's trying to cut taxes. He's trying to make it profitable for American companies to manufacture in the United States, or not even American companies, global companies, let's say, to manufacture in the United States, pay American wages, not Chinese or Vietnamese wages, and still be profitable. And if you can do that, you will see a rebirth of American manufacturing. Now, let's not kid ourselves. America was never a manufacturing juggernaut. Our highest peak of manufacturing in the United States came in 1979. It was barely 20% of the economy. But we can bring back a lot of industries that have left if we're able to continue to do what he is doing, which is decrease regulations, decrease taxes, increase incentives for people to come here, but not the way the Democrats want to do it. The Democrats always want to do it with grants and with loans and picking winners and losers, picking industries that will win, industries that will lose. We saw that with their Green New Scam, and it didn't work because Americans reject that. They want companies to be successful based on their own merits. They just want their hands to be untied so they can be the best that they can be.
And finally, in just the last few minutes we have with you, Jim, and I appreciate this, you know, especially in the midst of all the news with Iran, I think this is important to focus on. the economy and the fact that people aren't as concerned as they were, you know, even at the beginning of the year. And so how do you balance the political narratives? You know, obviously you're saying that the doomsday warnings and those predictions are falling flat versus America thriving. Is Trump winning the overall PR war on this front?
I believe he is. And if you look at it, Jenna, Trump has gotten the left on every 80-20 issue to take the 20% view, right? He's gotten them to do that with taxes. He's gotten them to do that with Doge. He's gotten them to do that with illegal immigration. He's gotten to do that with actually the war between Iran and Israel. The Democrats have taken the wrong side of all these issues. So Trump politically is winning, and all of these issues are good for him. And more importantly, they're good for the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, his approval ratings, well, you know, again, in speaking with Rasmussen's CEO yesterday, I asked him this question as well, that is it that Trump's approval ratings can't reach kind of some of the peak that we saw, you know, in sort of the Bush era and all of that because of the overemphasis on a 24/7 news cycle that we really didn't see historically, you know, 30 and 40 years ago. It was like people, if there was a big thing in politics, people would tune in to the news, but we had just the nightly news, like 1 hour, and that was all the content that they could cover. It wasn't, you know, literally as many headlines as all of these networks can push out and 24/7 on X. And so, you know, there's just a lot more that people can have the opportunity to get upset over, frankly. But overall, I mean, I think that Trump, especially in his second administration, is really fulfilling the reason that so many people voted for a second term, wanted him back in the White House. And so even if his approval rating ultimately doesn't get to some of those levels, do you think that that's just because of the era that we're in, or is it attributable to anything else?
You will never see Trump get approval ratings, say, in the 60% range, ever, because the country has become so divided. It started with Obama when he was president, and it's continued on since then. It has to do with the news cycle, but it also has to do with the polarization of the left. I mean, literally, I mean, it's an old joke, but if Trump came out of the White House basement today and said, "We've cured cancer," Cory Booker would take to the floor of the Senate and say, "Americans have the right to die of cancer." Right? That's how politicized this country is. If Trump walked across the Potomac River, the headline would be "Trump can't swim." So we're at the point in our world where no matter what a politician does, and even on the left, if a leftist politician does something good, they get killed as well. So we are going to be divided for a long time. Hopefully Trump can reunite the country and get people just be focused on America first.
Well said. All right. Well, Jim Nels, really appreciate it. You can follow him on X at Real Jim Nels. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. This June 24th marks 3 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. But here's what you may not know. Abortion numbers have surged to a 10-year high. The battleground has shifted from the courtroom to our homes. Today, over 60% of abortions happen through the abortion pill, taken in silence and often alone. Preborn Network clinics are standing in the gap, meeting women in their most desperate hour. And here's what they're seeing. Young mothers, terrified and misled, are delivering their babies, tiny, perfectly formed, onto bathroom floors. These precious babies, once called just tissue, now are lifeless. 11% of these women who take the abortion pill will suffer serious health complications. Countless others carry emotional scars for a lifetime. When you give to Preborn, you're not just saving a baby, you're saving a mother as well. You're giving her hope, financial support, and the truth. Preborn has already rescued over 350,000 babies, but there are so many more who need our help. Your tax-deductible gift makes this mission possible. To donate now, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And Governor DeSantis and the state of Florida are stepping up to help rescue U.S. citizens and U.S. residents that are fleeing Israel in the midst of the Israel-Iran conflict. And so this coming from Bay News 9, the state of Florida arranges rescue flights for U.S. residents fleeing Israel. Governor Ron DeSantis's office is working to facilitate rescues of Floridians, mostly U.S. Jewish Americans from Israel. Residents were scheduled to board flights home that were arranged by the state of Florida. So a 13-hour operation evacuated about 1,500 people from Israel on Tuesday. They were taken to neighboring Cyprus and are scheduled to be flown into Tampa and other areas on flights arranged by the state of Florida. And so my next guest, Wendy Nissan, her son was actually among these that were evacuated, and she joins me now. So Wendy, this is really an amazing story, and how not only Governor DeSantis, but also Senator Jay Collins, who's been a frequent guest on this show. I have so much respect for him. I'm so proud that he's one of our state senators. He's a Green Beret, and he posted on social media that he was part of this team going over there. Kevin Guthrie, our Director of Emergency Management, is part of this. And so this is really a full, robust effort from the state of Florida. And so tell us about your son and how much that rescue has meant.
Well, thank you, Jenna. Thank you for having me. And I agree with you on everything you said. I mean, when the first, ballistic missile started coming down, I said to my son, don't worry. I said, Governor DeSantis is going to get you out. I knew after October 7th that he rescued hundreds of Floridians who were trapped in Israel. And I just know, living in life as a Floridian, that, Governor DeSantis always has a plan. And with Kevin Guthrie behind him, and obviously with, Senator Jay Collins of Green Beret, we have the dream team here in Florida. So it was never a question, if it was just when it was going to start happening. So and I just want to make one small thing. My son is actually not out yet. He was not part of that first mission that they brought the kids out yesterday. My son was he's on a longer program, and so I think the initial thought process was that get the kids who committed on the Birthright program to like a 9-day program that were already had overstayed. It was longer than they had already planned on. They get them out first, but the kids who planned on being there for the whole summer, maybe this war would end sooner, and maybe they could go back to their apartments and their summer wouldn't be ruined. But so that's not the plan. The program has been canceled, and so they are going to be getting them home as well. But that their program was not put on the first mission, so they're still a few days out.
Okay,
and
that's good to know. And so we'll be praying for those future missions, and specifically for your son. And so,
Thank you. So
he's over and was planning to be there for the whole summer. What was the program, and what was the rationale going over there in the midst of all of this? And then the cancellation. I mean, tell us a little more of the background.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing program. Birthright, as many people have heard of the Birthright program, it's an amazing program that it's about a 9-10-day program that you go and just travel and experience Israel for Jewish students to get an appreciation and love for their heritage and their culture. So then there's a second level, an immersion program, where you go, and it's called the Onward program, and that's the program that my son participated in with about 42 other U.S. University of Florida students, and they arrange to have an internship. So they work in Tel Aviv for the summer. So they have apartments, they have roommates, but they have a life where they actually immerse themselves in life in Israel. And, when you said, what is it like going over there? I mean, there's never a time when you can just say, Israel is 100% perfectly safe. So you always go knowing there's something could happen in the back of your mind. This was really not known. But you never can anticipate, when something that's been, they've been talking about for a decade is going to happen while your child is there.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many trips and other things that are scheduled. And I know even here at American Family Association, you know, we have a trip that our leader, Tim Wildman, leads, you know, every fall. And I know that they're in the midst of contemplating that and, you know, looking at all of these things. And it's always really difficult to mm-hmm. assess, you know, these types of things. And when the world events, you know, may culminate. And so so how long was your son over there before all of this began? And have you been able to talk to him in the midst of all this, or, you know, describe some of the communication from the governor's team?
Yeah, no. So he got there the end of May. And so he was about 3 or 4 weeks. And honestly, I mean, I've never heard him happier. He was living an amazing life. They lived right around the corner from the Shook, and he, you know, the fruits and the vegetables and the food, it was just, he even told me he was going to the butcher. His mom, the fresh meat is amazing. So they really were having an incredible experience. And I think the hardest part for the students on the program is that they're so sad to leave, is that they were just really getting into this routine of living this life. And they, you know, when you're in college, you plan your summers and your schedule and your courses, but this was planned for their, you know, especially for that summer to go over. So it's really hard to, how can you ever fit it back in? It's kind of a once in a lifetime experience. So for that to be ending is really disappointing for so many of these students. Communication, now that we have great technology between WhatsApp and Signal, I mean, we probably speak to him, you know, probably a million times a day. But, you know, I think the biggest part of it is that we can, you know, especially through the bombings, they were initially in Tel Aviv. And so, you know, we can see the alert system in Israel is so unbelievable. So, and because these, and I think the difference that people need to understand about this bombing versus what normally goes on in Israel between the rockets that come down, because that's what I've heard the most from people saying, you know, what's the big deal? This always happens in Israel. But this is like nothing ever that people have experienced in Israel. You know, when a rocket comes down, it really doesn't do much damage. And, you know, the Iron Dome does, it's not 100% hermetic. It doesn't capture everything. But a ballistic missile is like none other. So when it makes it through the Iron Dome, you know, we get a 30-minute warning, a 15-minute warning, then that 90-second warning. And then, you know, as a parent, you literally are holding your breath. It's like Russian roulette. You know, if it gets through, is it going to be somewhere where my children is, or what, the rest of the people in Israel, who, please God, you know, please keep everybody safe. And it's just a different level and intensity. So it's just night after night after night. So, and it was straight at Tel Aviv and Haifa, so the more populated areas. So it was really intense. So the students have all been moved to a much safer area in Israel, and he actually had 2 nights of no bomb shelter. So that's been a big relief. And so we've got the best group, you know, we've got the best team. You know, Jay Collins is on the ground. He's orchestrating all of this. I feel very thankful with the group we've involved. I know, you know, Kevin Guthrie, the brains behind it all. I mean, he can, you know, people, anyone who lives in Florida knows, you know, he's the man when hurricanes hit, he's the man telling us everything we need to do to keep safe. So I know we have the dream team they're going to plan to get them out. It's just, you can't plan very far in advance, because obviously in the middle of the war, the landscape changes every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, knowing he's still there, and there are still, you know, others that are waiting to be evacuated, at least they're moved to a safer place. And mm-hmm. Wendy Nissan, we will be praying as an AFR family for their safety, for the safety of the governor's whole team, and that these evacuations would happen quickly, and that all of your loved ones can return home safe. And, you know, this, I'm sure, will be an unforgettable experience in maybe some different ways than he anticipated. But you know, but definitely to see, you know, this kind of support from the governor's team. I mean, this is real leadership. And as a fellow Floridian, you know, this is exactly why I moved to Florida, because we can trust Governor DeSantis's leadership. This is exactly what you want in a leader, to know that that they truly care and, you know, do things that aren't necessarily part of the job description, but they know that it's the right thing to do and it's a righteous cause. And so they always step up and do that here in Florida. And I wish that that other states had confidence in their leaders like we do here in Florida. So I'll give you the last word here, though, on, you know, how can we best pray for you, for your son, and, you know, the all of the other families that are involved?
No, and thank you. Like I said to my son, as the first, you know, missiles were coming in, I said, don't you worry. Governor DeSantis has your back. He will get you out. And I mean, but prayers are certainly welcome as the landscape keeps changing. You know, the U.S. Embassy is closed now for the rest of the week. We don't really know exactly what that means. So, but I, like I said, I know I have Jay Collins on the ground. I have the utmost faith and confidence in him. And they know our kids are there, and they are going to do everything to safely get them out. So prayers are most welcome. That is what I keep asking everyone for. I know I've got the brain trust and the will and the might to get everyone out safely. And now we just need to all rally around them and make sure we pray and help get them out safely and quickly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, we will be praying for that. And I hope you will keep us updated as well, so that we can know when your son has returned safely. And again, just so much appreciation and admiration for the governor's team, including Senator Collins, Kevin Guthrie, and so many others. So thanks so much, Wendy, for joining this morning. And in the last few minutes we have here, I want to draw your attention as well to this kind of little bit of controversy from our friends over at Focus on the Family on social media yesterday. This is, of course, to the left, Pride Month. And so in the midst of Pride Month, this social media post just seemed very odd. They said yesterday, is being gay a sin? Before we say anything else, please know that, quote unquote, being gay doesn't send anybody to hell. God uses only one fact to judge the world and determine who is saved and who isn't: faith in Jesus Christ. Here's the bad news. We all deserve to go to hell, but the good news is that God loves us in spite of our sin, and he sent his son Jesus Christ to purchase our redemption, and then linked to an article. So this was heavily ratioed on social media. A lot of very faithful Christians were questioning why this this post was trying to basically parse this really, I think, theologically damaging kind of response, that it's not being gay that's a sin, it's acting on those types of urges. Well, we know from the Bible that that it says in 1 Corinthians 6, or do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived, neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor homosexuals, nor thieves, nor the greedy, nor the drunkards, nor the revilers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. And this was posted by our good friend Daryl Harrison, among others, in response to this. And it was really troubling to see this come from Focus on the Family. They ended up, because of the controversy, posting a response to everyone saying this. This post has caused some confusion. Here's what we stand. I think they meant where we stand. Focus on the Family's position has always been and continues to be consistent with Scripture. Homosexual behavior is fundamentally in conflict with the Christian faith. The idea of being a quote-unquote gay Christian is an oxymoron, antithetical to both the Bible and church history. At the same time, we have a great compassion for those wrestling with unwanted same-sex attraction. For decades, we have walked alongside thousands of such individuals to help them steward their sexuality according to God's design. This recent article from our Daily Citizen team more fully outlines Focus's position on these matters, and then they link to a separate article. So overall, I think that was good that they at least addressed that, clarified it. However, that parsing and that nuance to speak specifically about homosexual behavior still doesn't address the fundamental problem with their original post, that a lot of the LGBT community is suggesting that some people are born with those urges for same-sex attraction and that that's not sinful. It's, and hey, we were born this way. And so it's only acting on that that is ultimately sinful. And we have to understand that the Bible clearly teaches that man is fallen. We all have sinful urges all the time. That's part of being fallen creatures, and that we are in need of a savior. And so it's not a matter of saying, well, hey, I was born this way. I was born wanting to go out and rob banks. I was born going out wanting to commit adultery, and that's fine. It's just not acting on those urges. No, no person is righteous, not one. We have to call it out for what it is, which is sin. And we can't use Pride Month to try to kind of parse and nuance our way into some of these theological concepts to try to brush over the fact that humanity is fallen and we all need a savior. So I hope that Focus on the Family and whoever was behind this actually really steps up, and we don't just, as a greater evangelical community, kind of just, you know, go, well, you know, that apology was fine, so let's not parse those theological differences. So you can go read that still on their X post. Reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.